Welcome to God and Country Radio, where I discuss his current social, economic, political, and prophetic events in the life of Scripture. I'm your host, Pastor Brad Winship. The topic I'd like to discuss on this week's program is the question, did Vice President Mike Pence do the right thing on January 6th in certifying the Electoral College count? There are questions as if he's even there to certify the election, or if he's there just to read the results. Well, this was a question that was asked at the recent Republican primary debate. Here's the question from the moderator. Quote, so President Trump's former vice president is on a stage tonight. He has faced hecklers on the campaign trail over his actions on January the 6th. On that day, the vice president moved forward with the certification of the election. Do you believe that Mike Pence did the right thing? Senator Scott, do you believe he did the right thing? And Tim Scott answered, absolutely, he did the right thing. Asa Hutchinson said Donald Trump was morally disqualified from being president as a result of what happened on January 6th. Chris Christie said Mike Pence stood for the Constitution. He deserves our thanks as Americans for putting his oath of office and the Constitution in 9 states before personal political unfair pressure. Nikki Haley said, I think the Vice President Pence did the right thing, and I do think we need to give him credit for that. Doug Burgum said, happy to answer the question. Mike Pence did the right thing on January 6th. And Ron DeSantis at first avoided the question and started to talk about how this upcoming election is not about January 6, 2021, but about January 20th, 2025. But then being pressed, DeSantis said, you know, Mike did his duty. I have no beef with him. Now, during the exchange, Mike Pence said the following. I think the American people deserve to know whether everyone on this stage agrees that I kept my oath to the Constitution that day. There's no more important duty, so answer the question. I put my left hand on Ronald Reagan's Bible. I raised my right hand and I took an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. And it ended with a prayer. So help me God. It was a promise that I made to the American people, but I also made it to my Heavenly Father. Every day for 4 years, I sought to keep the oath, and everyone on the stage needs to make it clear whether or not they will do the same if they earn this job in the confidence of the American people. The American people deserve to know that the president, President Trump, asked me in his request that I reject or return votes unilaterally, power that no vice president in American history has ever exercised or taken. He asked me to put him over the Constitution, and I chose the Constitution, and I always will. Unquote. And to quote an article from National Review, Mike Pence has made his courage in standing up to Trump's pressure an important theme in his campaign. But to that I would add, was this courage on the part of Mike Pence in defending the Constitution, or was this a lack of courage in being unwilling to pursue the possibility of serious fraud in the election? Like is often said, one man's freedom fighter is another man's terrorist. So one man's courage could be another man's cowardice. And people can have courage, but is it righteous courage? The signers of the Declaration of Independence are said to have had courage. They risked their lives, their liberty, their property in signing the Declaration of Independence. But the British called it treason, a breaking of the law of Britain. So it all depends on one's perspective. Here are some more questions. Did President Trump actually say to Mike Pence, I want you to put me over the Constitution? Well, there's no evidence of that. This is obviously Pence's interpretation of what President Trump was asking him to do. And here's another question. Was Mike Pence defending the Constitution, or was this his own interpretation of the Constitution? I mean, does the Constitution even address this issue? Does it give or not give the vice president the right to refuse the certification of electors? The Democrats and the Democrat media would have us to believe that this legal question is settled, that the vice president has to accept the electors. Well, the question's not that simple. Congress, not the vice president, ultimately decides whether to accept the votes from any particular state, but the vice president can play a role in objecting or affirming the certification. And that is really my concern with Mike Pence and his actions on January 6th, and the concern of those in the Republican Party who believe that there was substantial fraud in the election. Now, legally, there's no question that Mike Pence had to ultimately accept the decision of Congress. But there's a whole lot more he could have done in protest. So here's the actual law. The 12th Amendment of the Constitution outlines how the president is to be elected. The states shall designate electors to represent how their states voted for the president. And then they send their electoral votes to the federal government. The president of the Senate, who's the vice president, shall, in the presence of the Senate and the House of Representatives, open the certificates, and the votes shall then be counted. The person having the greatest number of votes for president shall be the president. So there's no mention there of the vice president having any role in deciding the validity of the electors' votes. However, in 1876, in the presidential race between the Republican Rutherford B. Hayes and the Democrat Samuel Tilden, four states sent conflicting electors, some in support of Hayes, others in support of Tilden. Oregon, South Carolina, Florida, and Louisiana. So the Republicans at that time argued that it was the decision of the vice president to decide whether or not to accept certain electors and their votes. The Democrats said no, it was the responsibility of Congress. A compromise was reached, and a congressional commission was created to decide which electors to accept. Well, because of that controversy, 10 years later, so that this would never happen again, Congress passed the Elector Count Act of 1887. And the act reserved to the states the final determination of any controversy or contest concerning the appointment of any or all of its electors. The only way for there to be objections to the validity of the electors is if one senator and one congressman put in writing their objections. Then the issue has to go to each house and be debated there for hours, and then Congress would then vote whether or not to accept the electors and their certification. And this is what happened on January 6th and 7th of 2021. Two Republicans, one from the House, one from the Senate, objected, and so it went to a vote in the House and Senate. 139 Republicans in the House and 8 Republicans in the Senate voted not to accept the electors because of alleged fraud in certain states. And of course, that was not enough votes to stop the certification. Now, I couldn't find in any of these laws, in the 12th Amendment of the Constitution, or the Electoral Count Act of 1887, any direct reference to the role of the vice president in determining the validity of the electors. You know, some lawyers say it's there. I don't see it. But a year later, after January 6th of 2021, the Democrats put into an omnibus appropriations bill the Election Count Reform Act of 2022, which clarified the role of the vice president in the whole matter. You following me on this? Well, anyway, while the Republicans were having their debate, Tucker Carlson was interviewing Donald Trump. And President Trump contended that if the original law said Mike Pence could do nothing to object to the electors and their votes, why would the Democrats want to reform the 1887 bill? And Trump actually makes a good point. Why would the Democrats want to change the law if it was already clear that the vice president could play no role? Well, here's my take on the whole thing. The real issue is not whether the vice president could or could not legally certify or accept certain electors from certain states constitutionally. I mean, it's pretty obvious that Pence had to go along with the vote of Congress. But that Pence is congratulating himself for having to follow the Constitution, it's really, for me, a smokescreen over the real issue. The real issue is how Pence was too accommodating, too willing to certify the election without raising objections. And that even afterwards claiming that Trump put unconstitutional pressure upon him, when it's really not unconstitutional for the vice president to defend any case that there was fraud in the election. So that's the issue. Pence did not say or believe that there was serious doubt concerning the outcome of the election. Now, yes, he had to accept legally the electors from the states. He had to accept the vote of Congress against the 147 Republicans. But that doesn't mean he had to personally validate the results of the election. He could have stood with Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz, who were vocal about election fraud. So the real question for Pence and the other Republicans at the recent primary debate was not, did Pence do the right thing constitutionally? But the question should have been, was there substantial fraud in the 2020 election that calls the results into doubt? I would have loved to have heard the candidate's answer to that question. Here's the bottom line. How one views January 6th, what Pence did, the Trump indictments, all comes down to whether one believes or doesn't believe there was substantial fraud in the 2020 election. Now, the Democrats and the Democrat media have created the narrative that there was no fraud. As Biden said, election fraud is the big lie. And because Republicans acquiesced to that narrative, particularly people like Mike Pence and Chris Christie and Mitch McConnell, it has really squelched any continual legitimate investigation into the 2020 election. And it's really allowed the Democrats to push the envelope with these prosecutions. And this rolling over on the part of Republicans is exactly what the Democrats want. And it's exactly why they're pushing the narrative that anyone who objects to the election is an insurrectionist. Just imagine for a minute if the Republican Party stood its ground on election fraud and continued to fight for more investigation. That certainly would have taken the wind out of the Democrat sails. Social media outlets could not have been really censoring investigations into election fraud if the entire Republican Party was united in continuing the investigation. The Democrats would have done that. Look what they did with the Russian collusion hoax. So again, it all comes down to what one knows and believes about claims of fraud in the 2020 election. Now, about a year and a half ago, Trump posted on his social media platform, Truth, a statement that Republicans and Democrats both rebuked. Quote from Trump, "A massive fraud of this type and magnitude allows for the termination of all rules, regulations, and articles, even those found in the Constitution. Our great founders did not want and would not condone false and fraudulent elections." Do you find that controversial? It doesn't bother me. Because let's not forget the roots of our nation. Our founding fathers actually defied the laws of the British Empire because they believed doing the right thing was above the laws of King George. So if an election had actually been stolen by one party through cheating, the Vice President of the United States or any member of Congress would have to object and practice some form of resistance. Maybe the Vice President would have had to have refused to certify the election and then maybe step down as Vice President. If there is such fraud and cheating, it calls for a constitutional crisis. Even though Mike Pence is the Vice President and he has sworn to uphold the Constitution, that doesn't mean he is forced by the Constitution to lie about election results, if they are indeed fraudulent. See, the real problem was that Vice President Pence wasn't really convinced that the election could have been stolen. And that's why he did what he did. Because if he really believed there was cheating, he would not be claiming that he had to follow the Constitution. He would have at least been looking for some other recourse, but he wasn't looking all that hard. Now you could say, okay, Pence didn't really know the facts, or he's too trusting of what some people were telling him about the election. Well, my contention is he should have had a little bit more humility. He could have said, I'm not really sure. Or he could have said, there needs to be further investigation. Or I'll certify this, but I'm going to vote with the other 147 Republicans who objected. You see, Pence was just too quick to give in to the Democrat narrative. And that's the issue many conservatives have with Mike Pence. And that's why I believe he's going to lose in the primary big time. Here's a mind exercise. What if someday it's revealed that Donald Trump actually won the election? Now, I'm not saying that Trump won the election. But what would happen if someday that fraud is uncovered? Nobody on the left wants to even consider that possibility. But it is possible. In many legal cases, it takes years for evidence to be compiled and cases settled. Here's a recent disclosure. Joint Task Force of Michigan Attorney General and State Police hand evidence of major election fraud in 2020 to the FBI, and the FBI buries it. From the report, on October 8, 2020, the city clerk in Muskegon, Michigan, noticed a female, later identified as Brianna Hawkins, dropping off between 8,000 and 10,000 completed voter registration applications to the city's clerk's office. Days later, after discovering many of the forms were in the same handwriting and had non-existent or invalid addresses, the city clerk and her supervisor reported the incident to the local police for further investigation. The same woman returned 12 days later, on the final day for turning in ballot applications, with an additional 2,500 forms, many of which were also found to contain erroneous phone numbers, addresses, and signatures that did not match those on file. Officials from a joint task force then interviewed Hawkins. Hawkins explained that she was being paid $1,150 a week to find unregistered voters and provide them with a form so they can get registered to vote or obtain their absentee ballot. And so the Michigan Attorney General's office did a criminal investigation and discovered that Hawkins was employed by an organization that set up temporary offices in several swing states prior to the 2020 election. The police report from 2020 reveals that a Tennessee-based group, GBI Strategies, has been in operation since 2014, headed by a longtime Democrat Party operative Gary Bell. GBI was active in at least 20 states during the 2020 election cycle. A search warrant served on the Southfield, Michigan location of GBI Strategies discovered semi-automatic guns, silencers, suppressors, hundreds of prepaid cash cards, along with dozens of new burner phones and numerous completed and partially completed voter registration forms. Records found at the Southfield location further identified additional operations in other states, listing similar assets on hand in those locations. Examination of the specific ballot applications turned in by Hawkins revealed many had returned addresses from two businesses in Southfield and Auburn Hills, Michigan. This would result in ballots being sent to these commercial locations, which Michigan police believed were to be filled out and cast fraudulently. Because the scheme came to light less than a month before the general election of 2020, it was not possible to interdict all of the fraudulent ballot requests, nor to prevent fulfilled requests from being returned and counted as legitimate votes. Michigan State Senator Ruth Johnson, a former Secretary of State, said, "My estimate is over 800,000 ballot applications were sent to non-qualified voters in Michigan," unquote. So Trump lost that state by about 147,000 votes. But this report is true. There's no denying it. And so why is Pence claiming to be such a hero? He may actually just be complicit in the cover-up. Proverbs 25:26. "Like a trampled spring and a polluted well is a righteous man who gives way before the wicked." It's not courage, it's giving way. At the very least, the jury is still out on this. History might take a different view of Mike Pence and his role in January 6th. Now, I'm out of time, but what I'd like to cover in my extended YouTube version of this program is this whole issue of being a Christian but still making poor judgments. Mike Pence is a professing evangelical Christian. It appears as if he has saving faith, but that doesn't mean he understands the biblical role of government and has his biblical priorities exactly right. Back in 2016, when President Trump chose Mike Pence to be his running mate, I did a program about Mike Pence and how he failed the Christian community in Indiana. Christians in Indiana worked very hard to get the Religious Freedom Restoration Act passed in Indiana as a stopgap measure to protect Christians from having to approve and support the gross immorality of the LGBTQ agenda. But once the bill was passed, the LGBT community in Indiana became enraged, and they engaged in their usual tactics of boycotts and lies to discredit the legislation. But rather than standing up for the bill he had just signed, or rather than waiting for all of the caterwauling and the media hype to die out, Governor Pence amended the Religious Freedom Restoration Act so that it became, in effect, the Homosexual Freedom Restoration Act. The amended bill codified in Indiana a requirement for homosexual accommodation. It equated sexual immorality with human rights and made sexual orientation and gender identity a civil right. And Pence signed this. Tony Perkins with the Family Research Council in Washington stated that this proposal guts the Religious Freedom Act and empowers the government to impose fines on people who follow their beliefs about traditional marriage. So Pence was putting a moral equivalency between morality and immorality, putting an equal treatment or allowance for evildoers above doing what was right biblically. So let me suggest that maybe Pence was doing the same thing when it came to January 6th. But I'll get more into that in my extended YouTube and Rumble versions of this program. This will be video number 272. My website for all of the links and to listen to this program again or other past programs is godandcountryradio.org. Just spell it out, godandcountryradio.org. Thanks for listening. Thanks for your support. May Jesus Christ reign.